Hi, friends. Generally, I let my robot assistant handle any sort of post-recording audio edition. I thought I should address this myself. The book we're covering today is attempting to clumsily address ableism, which means that it does have a lot of very explicit and very, very dehumanizing ableist content. And I thought people should know ahead of time that we're going to be discussing it a little bit. We don't go terribly in depth, but it is present. It is very in there, and it's the whole book. It's the entire book. That's all. Take care of yourself. Love you. Bye.
Here in Taxon, did you manage to find some earbuds? Welcome to the Wonder Yurks, for all your Animorphs rereading and rewatching needs. I'm Sarah.
I'm Blair.
And I'm Seda.
Hi.
Hey. It's Wonder Yurks. It's Animorphs.
It is Animorphs. We've been just having a funky fresh time.
Mm-hmm.
Ready to dive ass long into this little book that we've got.
Mm-hmm.
We've been keeping ourselves very busy. What's our narrative? That we're also Animorphs? Fighting.
Visser 4?
Pretty sure I'm a controller at this point.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, no. Oh, my God. The deep lore. But we have. But we're not sure yet, and you're very convincing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the lore.
My redemption arc is going to be wild, y'all.
Oh my god, Seda's so excited. And redemption arc. I'm so into it.
Uh-huh.
Seda, I just want to let you know that I am now very much picturing you as like a 90s cartoon villain, and Geralt is like your, like how Claw in Inspector Gadget had his lap cat, like Geralt is yours.
Yeah, that's pretty much my ideal aesthetic, but like sort of like a Carmen Sandiego, but a little more like techno.
Yes.
Technoir, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that just what?
I got really excited about that.
What was that show? Cyber Six. Is that what the name of that show was?
Cyber Six. I think is one that you're thinking about. I think it is a Canadian one.
Yes. I know it's a Canadian cartoon, but I don't. I think Cyber Six is what it's called.
I don't know. I've never watched it. I've only heard about it from other people. But
I think I saw like 30 seconds of an episode when I was a kid, and it changed my life.
Oh, I've seen these characters on the internet.
Yeah, it's like detective cyber gender stuff, basically.
Yeah, gender stuff.
Word.
Yeah.
which I think is a genre all into itself. Just
yep. Also, my ideal aesthetic.
Right? Isn't it?
Yeah.
Gender is aesthetic. Gender is basically mostly aesthetic.
At the end of the day, gender is nothing but aesthetic.
So true. Oh my god. That, but unironically, and also my actual theory on gender. Let's unpack it. Shall we dive in to Animorphs 40?
Yeah, tell me about this cover.
I hate it.
Okay. It's bad, but also what did we expect, I guess,
it's bad, but also it's hilarious because this is the least disinterested Marco has ever looked on the cover of a book. He's just like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Though I will
He's normally doing like a smirk or looking kind of concerned, but this is just him just like,
oh, the most disinterested. Yeah.
This is just like him, like he's already shot like the other like 20 covers this model has to do. And so they're just like, yeah, just like kind of do like a cool T pose and jump a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's inherent difficulties in turning a human child into an insect. Mm-hmm. Marco is turning into a little bee, a little honeybee. In this one, which is fun. The insect morphs are always their own particular brand of terrifying.
Yeah.
So I saw this cover and I was like, oh, they're like felt a little daunted, I guess.
I love Marco, like in the fourth one, like the denim stinger, the jinger that he has.
It's bad. It's all bad.
It rules.
And also those, like beef jerky looking like legs that's like as he's acquiring two like an extra set of legs, so he'll have six legs, arms as legs. Not only do they look like beef jerky, but they also apparently like acquire two new t-shirt sleeves to go along with them, which is always a little fun.
They look like they just came off the set of the hit movie Disco Worms.
Uh-huh. Or the film The Fly, which I think is also apt.
Well, yeah, that too. The eyes are great. Some real Alita Battle Angel stuff happening in that second one.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, mm-hmm.
This is just the worst the art has ever been.
Really bad. Though, to make up for it, actually, you know what? I take that back. I was about to say the tag is relevant, but it's fucking not. It's relevant, I guess, to the plot of the series. But it's not to this book.
Like, this is I feel like this is the least the Yerkes have been, like...
present? Like,
right.
Yeah, like, this is, like... So, I mean, the Yerkes are still, like, the antagonist of this book, but, like, barely.
So, right, so... The tagline is, this is your brain, is your brain with a Yerk. Any questions? My first impulse was to look up when the Rachel Lee Cook... drug PSA came out to see if this was maybe timely, but that came out in 97 and this book came out in 2000. So I'm sure that it was still like a big thing. Like I remember that from this time in my life, but it wasn't relevant enough to make it the tagline of your book.
Also, yeah, because like, I don't know, what like 9 to 13 year old child is going to say, look at that and be like, I get that reference. You know?
I mean,
listen,
I would've.
That, and also sometimes you just gotta throw something out there for the adults in the crowd, you know? Animaniacs was never making fucking Orson Welles jokes for the kids in the audience.
Do you think people's parents read Animorphs books to their kids?
You know that, like, one Simpsons... You know, like, that one Simpsons joke where, like, Homer is, like, reading... Okay.
But go ahead.
Where Homer, I don't even remember the story that he's reading, but it's just like he's reading like a story, and it's just like God, I'm sorry, I'm completely botching this. It's just he's reading the story, he turns the page, it's like a story that the audience knows. He gets to like a really fucked up part in it, and he's like, "We'll finish the rest of the story tomorrow."
Yeah, I don't know. It's just like
I feel like that's every page with these books.
Yeah, I just kind of like don't think about children reading these books. Until just now where I'm thinking about children reading these books, which is, like, weird.
Yeah.
You know? It's like... children's in the past don't exist, so it makes it difficult to conceptualize.
You're on a podcast with two of those children's.
That's so true.
It really is.
I'm also technically a children's of the past, but also, you know... Yeah. Not for Animorphs.
And
you know
this what, book know... is called The Other, which I guess is fine.
Yeah,
I mean, would the others not be the thing?
Yeah.
Like, not to be a pedant, but, I mean, that is my entire identity as a human.
They, you know what? They might have, like, a single noun rule. You know? Like, a singular noun.
Hold on, let me just go to Wikipedia list of Animorphs books. See if that's true.
I just scrolled up my PDFs. None of them end with an S except the weakness, so.
Right.
Damn.
Ooh, Oh no. That was the most deflated down with the sickness I've ever heard in my life. You were truly down with the sickness, but like just like in the bad way, not in the good way.
Down in the
oh no
sickness. That was Geralt. That wasn't me being sick, that was Geralt shoving his tail into my mouth.
Geralt.
Just so
your cat's sick.
Fantastic.
Oh wow! I'm looking at this Wikipedia page is making me realize that like we're pretty close. We're kind of getting close to the end here, huh?
We've got like 15 left.
We have like just over half a year left of this podcast, more or less.
That's a really funny way of putting it.
I mean, that's how I compartmentalize it in my brain, I guess.
Uh huh.
But yeah, we've got like aside from the other like numbered entries, we have a Megamorphs and an Elemist Chronicles to get through. Which actually, Megamorphs is next week. It's Megamorph is next episode, and it's the one where Jake wishes that, where Jake fucking, It's a Wonderful Life's himself.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
Yeah. Remember that happened in the TV show?
Yeah, no, I know it. Oh, it happened on the TV show. No, I don't know that.
Yep. Oh, I genuinely forget that, like, you were not on the podcast for any of the TV show episodes, I think.
No, I ceased to exist at that point.
You were fighting. You were fighting Yerkes.
You were not flooded as my cat.
Oh, yes,
that's right. That's the lore.
Was that the lore?
Yeah, yeah, it was...
I think that you became Nothlet as Geralt, and I became Nothlet as you. Or something.
If I'm Geralt and you're me, then who's driving the plane?
And he's the sheriff.
Oh my god. So, this is a Marco book. And we open on, I guess... Marco just having a chill ass day,
mm-hmm.
home alone, which is, I think, should be an automatic red flag for, like, all of the Animorphs that the worst possible thing is going to happen, probably. Though that might be just for most days for them, I guess.
Yeah.
The setup for this book, I have some quibbles about, but let's get into it.
By the way, I would like to set the record straight. The lore for when Blair was away was that Blair is now Seda, and Seda is now Geralt.
Oh, okay.
that makes more sense, because how would Blair on podcast if not?
Yeah.
What?
God, to be
but
Geralt.
But how would Seda on podcast if
how
not
Seda?
How
would Seda on podcast if not Seda? Yeah, there we go.
Look, we don't know about the speech capacities of cats, really.
That's true.
They could just be holding out on us. I don't trust them.
I don't know. I think Mildred can speak.
I don't think she can.
No?
I think Simba probably could. Mildred's dumb as shit. Just put that all out there. She's got a lot of moxie, I guess we could say. Mm. She's got a lot of willpower. She don't got a lot of, like, brain power to support that willpower, though. That's okay. We all love her because she's beautiful and perfect.
Yeah.
anyway, so Marco's chilling at home. He's watching television because everyone else is, like, busy or preoccupied or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he's channel surfing and comes across what I guess is probably, like, the equivalent of, like, a History Channel alien special.
And a
show called Unsolved Mysteries, which may or may not exist. It sounds like.
I gotta say, a little bit disappointed, because as soon as that got brought up, I thought that was gonna be the episode. Like, they were gonna have to, like, deal with, like the fucking, the what is it, the Ghost Facers episodes from Supernatural?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really thought that this would be an alien conspiracy book, and was really disappointed that it wasn't.
We do get one of...
special episode on ableism.
I'm pretty sure we do eventually get one of those conspiracy. But yeah, this, wow, it really did.
I feel like I'm
just
constantly cucked out of UFO conspiracy.
It really did. Yeah. It even ended with, like, a round table of, like, everyone going around and saying, like, a sentence or two about why, like, being ableist is wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, like, I mean, I feel like ableism was not really a thing that was thought about too much in mainstream media, like, now, let alone back in 1998. So Caplegate, I guess.
To be quite honest, it's a little sloppy.
Yeah, it is. I'm not trying to just give points for trying, but I do appreciate the fact that, like, there is care, at least.
I guess I appreciate it. It is not as effortlessly woven into the story as they probably thought it was.
The entire, it's funny because this is just, like, I think this is maybe the second or third book to have been published in the 2000s. But it still has that, you know, decade leak where it is so 90s from start to finish, from, like, the clumsy, very special episode feel to, like, the use of terms like differently abled, but even just Marco, like, sitting down and channel surfing and then being like, I saw something on TV, but how are we all gonna see it together? We don't have time to wait for the rerun or mail the station a check to buy a copy, which I guess was maybe a thing. And then
I don't know what psychopath was doing.
And Axe is just like, "No, don't worry. I got all the streaming services. What you
don't
want?
Don't worry. I hooked a CD-ROM up to my VCR, and I have it all."
Oh my god! It is fucking technology is moving at a fucking breakneck speed in this book. Yeah. So, oh my gosh! Here's my quibble. So. New section on the show called Here's My Quibble.
Mm-hmm.
So Marco sees an Andalite on the television, and he's like, "This is bad." But the Yurks already know that Andalites are on Earth, and he does say as much. And his reasoning why this is the worst thing that's ever happened ever is basically like, well, we can't have humans knowing about Andalites. They'd get all, like, weird about it. And I just, like... Just, if you look at any alien conspiracy theory that exists, like, there's, like, 2% of a very marginalized population that actually believes it's real, and then there's everyone else who definitely, definitely doesn't. So, I don't know if a blue blur showing up on midday television is going to... I don't know, put literally anyone in danger. Like, the Greys are fine, you know? The Pleiadians are fine. I think the fucking Andalites are fine.
It's, yeah, the whole thing is very, like, very, like, Hogwarts universe statute of secrecy, where, like, why? Why does it have to be secret? I guess, at least with magic, it's like, oh, then... We can't get into this. I will freak out. I hate the whole statute of secrecy thing so much. But it's with this, it's very much like... Didn't they, in a previous book, have a plot to, like, talk to the president and convince him that Yurks were real so that he would be warned and, like, humanity would arm themselves?
I think that's very early game kind of stuff.
Yeah, that was the book with the Shario rip, because they had intended on crashing that alien spacecraft on the White House lawn, I think.
In the White House lawn! It's such a hard left from this.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think they should still crash something on the White House lawn. I think that could be fun.
I think we should just do that, like, regardless. Not a threat.
I think, no, I mean, we're just, like, just an alien spacecraft. Totally harmless.
Yeah.
I don't live in your fucking country. I'm going to crash something on the White House lawn. I don't give a shit. Extradite me.
I also would like to just jump back a little bit, and there's a right before Marco sees the Andalite, he says, "I hit the mute button and waited, hummed some Kid Rock, yawned, bit a hangnail." So, A of all, I don't buy for a second that Marco stayed glued to this channel. I was a child with ADHD, much like I kind of suspect Marco is being.
Yes.
And I, like, commercials weren't, unless there was literally absolutely nothing else on television, like, I would have, like, gone to the baseball game rather than sit through the commercials.
Well, the thing is, though, that, like, there is literally nothing else on television, which is said because Marco is excited about it, because he wants to just flip channels. So I think that he, like, he's like, yes, there's nothing on, I get to just look at everything. Flip, 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 ooh. Ooh, a diss.
Aliens,
you
maybe.
Got a point. Also, I very much like the fact that Marco is a Kid Rock fan.
I don't know if I like that or not.
I think it makes sense. What Kid Rock song is he bumping?
I don't know any of those.
Literally the only one I can think of is the one that's like an homage to
also
Sweet Home Alabama.
Also, Werewolves of London, Sweet Home Alabama.
Yeah, the Sweet Home Alabama is the only one, but it's not. It's whatever that song is called.
It's like, Kid Rock just, like, had Werewolves of London and Sweet Home Alabama fuck, and then said, "I made this." Which, I mean, I guess fair use.
I'm looking through every, like, song that comes up when you search Kid Rock. The only one I know is the version of Picture he did with Sheryl Crow.
I also know Bow It Daba. Just because that was used in the soundtrack for Chuck fairly frequently.
And of course,
the immortal song of American Badass.
I think Kid Rock didn't make any music, and I think just a mass hallucination, maybe.
Yeah.
I think that's probably what's true.
I think that's more likely.
Yeah, than him, than whatever Kid Rock is actually existing. But in any case, Marco goes into full panic mode and is like, well, the only people I know who aren't busy are probably the two people most likely to co-conspire with me, which would be Tobias and Axe.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a nice a bit of fate for him. So he hops over to Tobias and Axe, who are also watching television as they are wont to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we basically have that whole conversation we talked about before, where Marco's like, a thing happened, but how to show it to you? Yeah. And Tobias is like, Axe has got this. And they discover... It is an andalite, but it's not any andalite they've seen before because it's got part of its tail cut off.
The fifth line of my notes is, engaging with Axe's disability politics is going to make this a pretty exhausting one, I think. Because right away, like, Axe is using andalite slurs
and yeah.
just being like, oh, this person is... I almost kind of want to throw a content warning for ableism on this. Just, yeah. like, it's sloppy, but just, like, how venomous Axe is being like, oh, Axe this is person terrible. Is worthless because they don't have their whole tail and cannot fight. And, like, is constantly, like, this person literally has no worth. And it's, like, cool.
yeah. I mean, I know, like, human society is not, like, super ups on that kind of stuff. Yeah. But also, like, every time I hear about any sort of, like, social discrimination with andalite society, fucking especially this, I'm, like, what kind of, like... like, hell is it to, like, live on whatever planet their planet is called.
Seriously.
Like, because it's, like, the most cartoonishly exaggerated versions of our, like, own discrimination, because mm-hmm. it seems as though they have no cultural diversity whatsoever, so it's, like...
Also, they do that thing where they do something weird with morphing, where Axe is, like... They're like, well, he can still morph, right? So he's probably, like... what if the Yurks find him? He'll be a useful controller. And Axe is like, no. He definitely can't morph, because if he could morph, he would have restored his tail from his own healthy DNA. Since when?
Yeah, this is like the second time. This is like the second time the Ghost Riders have gotten DNA wrong. Or morphing wrong.
If true, I feel like we wouldn't have had the Elmist have to come in and be like a Nothlet. Tobias, right? Because that's basically what the Elmist does, is like, okay, acquire yourself so you can morph back into yourself, basically.
It means that, like, injuries aren't a thing if you have morphing powers, which we know is not true.
Right. Yeah. Or I guess maybe it's a thing specific to andalite culture, like, where they somehow acquire themselves. And the kids just haven't done that, because what a fucking truly insane thing that is to do.
The thing is, though, if they acquire themselves, that means that in order to repair themselves, they would have to Nothlet themselves again, albeit on a technicality. I can't, like, and Axe is, like, the later discussion that they have about how Nothleting is, like really bad in Andalite society. I don't know. This means I just kind of, like, brushed past.
This is
totally
nonsense. Yeah. It really is.
This also, like, this doesn't sound... I mean, maybe he's just clumsily describing Nothleting yourself as yourself, but the way that he says he would have restored his tail from his own Delphi DNA makes it sound like he would have just been, like, ooh, looked into myself, found my DNA, sploot, sploot, whole tail again. Like, I don't know. It's...
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, and I don't think there's anything else in the canon to support that this is even possible.
And I think that I would brush it off a little more if the disease we run into later isn't specifically cured by Nothleting yourself.
Right.
But
Nothleting yourself as, I think, a different
andalite, yeah, but I'm just saying that I don't understand what you're doing with morphing powers, because are you just saying that the cure for both of these things is Nothlet. I don't know.
Right.
It's just so, like, okay, this, sure. This,
like, I feel like the ghostwriters did not exactly have Capplegate's Bible, her lore Bible, when writing these books.
I can't believe that's true. I think that Capplegate is not infallible and probably was like, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, because she kept a pretty close eye on all of these. I think Capplegate is prone to her logical inconsistencies.
Yeah, that's probably more accurate.
I think it drives us up a wall more times than not.
Yeah.
To memory.
Also, I scrolled too far down on Kid Rock's Wikipedia page and just, I wound up in the politics and views spot. And I'm not going to, like, list too many things here. I did just want to note that Kid Rock did endorse Ben Carson in the 2016 election, which I find very funny.
Well, it's an interesting choice, certainly, but somehow not a surprising one.
And also, he had shirts made with a map of the U.S., and all the states that voted against Trump were labeled Dumb Fuckistan.
Okay, well, that's fun.
Yeah. His name is Richie, and the entire Wikipedia page refers to him as such, and it's really weird.
That is a lot of information to take in about Kid Rock. Back to the book, though. I don't know if I can really focus on Kid Rock with my brain.
Sorry, yeah. That's fine. I'm going to close the Wikipedia tab before I read more.
So they basically decide to... they're like, well, we got to figure all this out. We got to go find this other Andalite. And so they're all, like, fucking around, basically. And they're with no luck. To the point where they're like, well, we should go home, basically, because it's getting dark out. So they hole up into a dark area and, like, demorph when a sudden attack by fucking...
A possum.
A possum, right. But, like, that, demorphs into just this fucking gigantic, truly huge Andalite. I do remember later, his hands described as shockingly huge.
Yeah.
Which says...
Yeah!
This is like, so a nearby possum appears and suddenly becomes an Andalite who is so beefy that Marco just loses his fucking mind describing him for like five paragraphs about how like broad his shoulders are and how like strong his arms look. Just like goes off.
He does.
Okay, A, he's gay. B, I'm starting to entertain a theory. Do not at me if any of the other books have produced the evidence that contradicts this. Do not at me. But I'm starting a theory that Axe just has really small arms, and he said that was a thing about Andalites to like in order to just say, oh yeah, we all have tiny arms.
You know, here's my theory. Because I was thinking about this too, and I think there's like, Axe is like a soldier, but he's not really a warrior, you know? And this guy is specifically referred to as a warrior. And that might be like a difference in like that maybe Andalites have the capacity to like be really beefy.
I love it.
But in a lot of cases, their muscles just kind of atrophy into the point where they just have really like shitty little arms.
I love it.
Does that hold water?
I'll work with that.
It's closer to supported, I think, because
certainly than when, my theory.
When they're like, why doesn't he just morph Axe? Axe is like, because I'm not a beefcake.
Oh, Axe, don't get you down on yourself so much. You've got a great personality.
You yep. sure do, bud. And so when this new Andalite appears, he's like, Visor 3, finally. And Axe is like, yep, that's me. And at least he... So I will say, to Marco's credit, I love this as a character trait of Marco's. Throughout the entire book, he is really on point with, like, calling Axe out for being an ableist piece of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, from the very beginning. Even as Tobias is, like, awkwardly trying to avoid the subject, Marco's like, no, what the fuck, dude? And then the very first thing that happens when Axe brings up this, so this is not the Andalite that they were looking for, this is a whole new third Andalite, fourth,
so many Andalites.
Seventh, I don't know. Wow, yeah, the ratio of Andalites has really gone up in the past, like, 10 books, huh?
Super yeah. rapidly. On all in the same location. I guess yeah. it makes sense, because that seems to be where the Yurks are centered. But also, like,
also, there's, like, I a kind whole of, I also, Earth. I kind of feel like it makes sense, because in the last 15 books, we've been on Ghost Rider. We've been with Ghost Riders, and I can understand a Ghost Rider's want. I mean, I don't know how much creative control Caplegate was exercising over these Ghost Riders. I don't know if she was... I don't know... if she had, like, the elevator pitch, or if she, like, kind of, like, worked, collaborated with them. But I can imagine if I was brought on as a ghostwriter, I would want to write about Andalites.
Yeah. I don't think that the ghostwriters have as much to do with it, again.
You're probably right.
Just, it was so, I'm
thinking too hard about these things.
I really think, I stand by my point from when we first got into ghostwriters, that if we didn't know these were ghostwritten, we would never... for the most part, probably not suspect it until we get into, like, the weird character stuff where, like, Cassie doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Half the time.
See last episode.
Yeah. So this new Andalite is like, is like, don't use that ableist Andalite slur towards my, oh my God, they're so in love. The romance in this book is off the fucking charts.
It is, like, so they are extremely gay, referred to as Shorms, and then also Tobias and Axe are Shorms?
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're family.
Yeah. So, that's fine.
Right, I keep forgetting that. The one, it's the one
I think we also had this conversation last episode.
It's the one episode of this podcast I have not been on. It's the one book I didn't read.
Look, we all have shipping disease, I understand.
We all have it.
Sato and I especially bad recently.
Recently.
I have had an AU floating around in my head for the last 2 weeks, and I know neither of you have seen the movie Summer Wars, but I would like to just put this out into the world, and then I will be done with it.
Okay.
I wrote all this down, actually. Hold on.
Have you watched that video essay I retweeted that talks about how Josie and the Pussycats is the greatest movie of all time?
I haven't yet.
I should watch it, because I literally just got super drunk and watched it, like, this Friday. This it's last really Friday. Good.
Did you not amazing. Watch it when I streamed it a little while ago?
I think I was there, but I don't think I was paying attention.
Yeah.
But then my roommate made me watch it.
I've not seen it, but I do know that the what is it, the 3 Short Hours, that song rips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyways, so here's my Animorphs Summer Wars AU. Cassie is Kenji, Natsuki is Rachel, Kazuma is Axe, Sakai is Elfangor. I don't know what Marco is. I'm still working on it. Tobias is Takashi. Jake is the baseball boy that everyone's cheering for, who never actually appears in any of the scenes. And Tom is Wabasuke. Thank you very much for your time. Please at me about this. I need to talk to somebody who knows what the fuck I'm talking about. Summer Wars is a really good movie. Summer Wars is a very good movie.
I appreciate this sort of outsourcing of AU collaboration, because sometimes I've been known in the past to just join, like, fandom Discord channels specifically for this activity. So,
Blair, you should watch Summer Wars.
I should do a lot of things.
I feel like you've definitely watched movies by that director before. Like, I mean, I'm not counting the Digimon movie. Like, did you ever watch, did Ross ever show you, Baron Umatsuri? The
no.
One Piece movie? Wow, that's no. surprising.
Nope.
Wolf Children?
Nope.
Girl Who Lived Through Time?
Nope.
Fuck.
We have to talk about this book.
Sorry.
So where were we? Shipping disease.
Shipping disease. So when they see a middle-aged man in the middle of the forest, who for some reason they don't decide is probably obviously Geffenillin's human sona. He just gets distracted while describing him to just talk about Jake for no reason. Marco basically, like, sees a human man and is like, wow, like Jake.
Jake is also a dude. That's like, so funny how that's how, yeah.
Yeah, their first thought is that, like, Geffenillin has, like, gone into, like, a yurk pool entrance in a cave, and this human man that they see walking out of the forest is probably a controller. It's just nonsense to, like, take up 3 pages. And then they find out that his human sona is Henry McClellan, assistant to a particle physics professor. And they, like, follow him around. We get some, like, classic, just, you know, surveillance. And Tobias is like, ooh, Gaffanilin had to leave suddenly in the middle of his workday because he got a call. He seemed upset. Maybe the call was about Merit. And Marco immediately called me out specifically for the immediate shipping by being like, yeah, well, maybe the call was from the Visser. Don't romanticize this.
Oh, I love Tobias. He, like, I think Tobias, I love that, I love that moment because I have to imagine that there was something wistful in Tobias's voice when he was saying that, like, to like, trigger what Marco said, because... Mm-hmm. You know what? I think Tobias really is a romantic. He does love a good romance.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, 100%.
This whole, honestly, like, I wish that the weird ableism thing didn't hang over it so much, because this would just be such a beautiful story of, like, repressed gay love. Like, it's so blatant with just, like, oh, yeah, my closest friend. Like, it's not even subtle. It feels on purpose that they are
right.
they are supposed to read as in love.
Right. I was noticing, so they're later they like basically show up at this dude's house and they're like, "Hi, we're going to talk to you about things." Mm-hmm. Marco makes a comment like, dude, your kitchen is way too clean for, like, two guys living in it. And what's his face? Mr. Impossible to pronounce name. Mm-hmm. As far as humans are concerned, two guys are not living here.
Exactly.
He basically says as much as, like, I'm a confirmed bachelor.
Literally. Like, okay, so even the way that Merritt got hurt is like so romantic of the two of them. Like, Gaffanilin, like, they were in a battle together. Gaffanilin's ship got shot, and somehow the wings of his ship locked into the Merit. I keep saying Merit because it's auto correcting Myrtle. Fucking Andalite names. Mid battle,
I hate them.
The wings of their ships get locked together, and they end up hurtling towards the ground. As a one unit, absolutely sure that they would die together, then somehow survive and take, like, help each other through, like, the most immediate grievous of their injuries. It's like, what the fuck? What the
it
fuck?
Is
That's
like
the most romantic thing I've ever heard.
It is an epic, tragic romance. Like, like from Greek poetry. Like, it
and
is
then,
insane.
Like, Axe is like, oh, wow, that's really upsetting that he didn't get to die a hero. And Gaffanilin is like, I'm actually pretty cool with the fact that he didn't die. Romance.
Yeah, it's romance. I think it's to, like, dive deeper into this specifically, it's like there is something, like, obviously Axe is holding on to, like, rigid and light, like, social standards by saying something like that, especially mm-hmm. like militaristic, like, social standards. What's it, like,
Calvinist.
Calvinist, that's not
G.
it.
G unit.
Greg is all, like...
Gaffanilin.
Gaffanilin is all, like... I mean, he's, like, outwardly, like, rejecting those sorts. Probably more of, like, a military dude bro than, like, Axes about mm-hmm. that sort of stuff. Just because he's older and has been more of a part of it and also is super ripped. And, like, is, like, outwardly rejecting that because he's like, no, that's fine. Like, I'm okay. Like, I'm just here to take care of him, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, he still hangs on to, like, a lot of the sorts of ideas. Merlitz or whatever is... I didn't retain any of these. Like, I kept reading them, but I didn't retain any of these names because they're so strange and, like, impossible. Is, like, living in isolation. Oh, spoilers, he's not actually there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't know. Look, love is real, I guess
love
is what
real.
I'm saying.
Yeah, it's a lot. There's, I mean, even later, ultimately, it's supposed to be clues that Myrtle has been... We're just going to say 1,000 different names for each of them, I'm sorry.
I think Myrtle is not the correct one, yeah.
Yeah.
And Rachel says, sounds like he's overcompensating and trying too hard to appear normal. And I was just like, the homosexuality of it all.
It is like a truly egregious. Like, truly egregious.
Yeah.
But
luckily, in the middle of this, we get Marco just holding a bee in his hand, which I like.
Yeah, he just grabs it. He's like, there's just something beautiful about being an animorph and just being like, ooh, there's an animal I haven't acquired yet. I mean, obviously he had specific, like, goals for this, because it's like, these bees come in and out without me seeing a hive in here, so there must be, like, an easy way to get in and out as a bee. But also, and at the same time, it felt very impulsive just to grab a bee and just be like, here's an animal, gotta acquire it because you truly never know.
I would impulsively acquire every animal I touched, essentially, if I were an animorph.
Yeah.
Okay. Like,
what if...
Like, I would just have, like, a Rolodex of dogs in my brain.
Yeah, I would be all of my friends' pets.
Oh my god.
I think I would actually genuinely carry a Rolodex just so I could, like, put, like, a little picture of a dog in there just so I know which dog it is. Just, like, see the names, who it belongs to.
I also love the detail we get of, so, this, you know, aforementioned, as described, Beefcake is also this incredibly proficient gardener, and gardening is regarded as, like, an art on the Andalite world.
So we get
him, like, having this, like, greenhouse of things that he's nurtured both from the earth and from his home world is so lovely.
It's truly beautiful. I feel a little sour about the fact that this book was, like, constantly like, but can we really trust him? Because I just wanted to love him so deeply.
Yeah, same. I'd love to go back and reread this one and just, like, skip all over the parts where it's like,
the good news is that he's totally trustworthy and, like, has the best interest in mind for, like, basically just his partner, but also, you know, he's like, well, I'm not gonna fuck you guys over either because, you know, I'm not a total monster, so that's cool. But before that,
sorry, this stupid,
you're reading Kid Rock still?
No, I just looked on the Wikipedia page and this is killing me.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Of everyone's... I actually love looking at the Wikipedia pages for these books because it does have a little table of all the morphs acquired. And per this book, it is just 5 honeybees, basically.
Yeah.
That morph for Jake.
Morphs acquired, none. Morph for Rachel. Morph acquired, honeybee, 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 honeybee.
Right. So we get another drone morph, basically, which is, I don't know why I keep forgetting about the ant morph, but totally forgot about it. Marco is really nervous about morphing a bee, but he's like, gotta do it. Mm-hmm. There's clearly no other way to get into this person's house. It's not like flies fly in the same way bees do. Anyway. Well,
and it's like, just before they, like, get their plan in motion, they all sort of meet up at the food court and everybody wanders off in pairs, and Rachel purposefully waits behind everyone else to get Marco alone, and he's like, "Hey, Rachel, what, you wanted to spend some one-on-one time with me?" And she's like, "Shut the fuck up, you clown. What's your plan for protecting my cousin?" And he's like, "Yeah." I know.
It's family.
It's family. They have, like, their whole thing together is very funny, and does at one point just go into Marco talking about communism?
So funny. It is, like, but it, so he turns into a bee, and he's, like, vipping around, and he's like, you know, it's not so bad, it's like communism, basically. It goes forth to just totally, poorly describe, what communism is.
Uh-huh. And Rachel calls him Comrade Marco. And I had one of those moments where I was like, Marco would do okay online in 2019, you know?
I think so. He would be a funny man with I would say 1,000 to 5,000 followers on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If he also had a podcast.
Oh,
what
yeah.
would Marco's podcast be?
I think probably just a conversational comedy podcast. Yeah. Those of which there are billions. Which is fine. I like who among us doesn't like a good chuckle?
Maybe a little bit, you know, get a splash of that dirt bag left in there.
Oh yeah. Oh no. Dirt bag leftist Marco is truly sending me.
Oh god, I hate to think about it.
It's so true though. It's so true and a little fun.
True. Oh my god, Marco would be on Trapo.
All inner queens, Marco.
Marco would be on Chapo, but he actually would call out Amber Frost when she says ableist things.
I guess so, evidently.
There's a moment where the when Marco gets to acquire the bee, it's because Gaffanillin is like, hey, Axe, did you want some of this cool root that we grow on our home world? And Axe is like, yes. And I was like, are they smoking weed together right now?
And it turns later, out kind of.
Later, Axe compares it to, like, caffeine. But he says it's a mild intoxicant that, you know, humans... Sorry, no, the opposite. That andalites use... Not the opposite, just a different one. Use kind of like... humans use tea or coffee in the morning, but it also is a medicine that helps with this disease called a Sulu's disease or something like that. That's a genetically programmed disease that attacks your DNA and causes you to basically have increasing chronic pain and loss of vision until death. It is 100% fatal. Why do andalites keep programming diseases? It sucks. So it seems a lot like it's weed. Like,
I think they just can't say it's weed. Yeah. I think they just can't say it's weed or, like other sort of like painkillers, you know?
So this is basically the like light bulb for Axe that Axe is like, oh, you know, yeah, Myrtle isn't in the place anymore. Who knows what's happening? But I think I've just realized that Gaffanillin has this disease, that's why he has those roots, and the only way to cure this disease is to acquire another andalite and then become a Nothlet of them, but becoming a Nothlet is cowardly. And Tobias is like, and then Axe is like,
yeah, you're giving me a complex.
It's super, super shameful to become a Nothlet in andalite society. It sucks. It's a coward's way out. No one would do it. And Tobias is like, I love this conversation.
Oh, no.
And then everyone's like, so why didn't he just acquire Axe? And this is when he's like, I'm little.
he's just wee.
He's just a little baby. You cannot change. He's just a little creature.
He's just a little boy. He's a horrible little boy in this book, but he is just a little boy. Mm-hmm. I am, like, just thinking about Axe just saying all of this, like just really horrible stuff and not even thinking about it.
Yeah.
He, like, truly has no self-awareness.
We just really, really close to each other have had two books where Axe is just like, well, back on Homeworld, we hate people who are different from us. And it's like, and like, at least he doesn't fucking learn anything in this book is one thing that's hard. At least in the very special sexism one, he was like, well, I like this girl, so maybe girls are people? I don't know. But in this one, he just, like, the best that we get out of him is that he looks this, like, disabled person in the eye and is like, I'll remember how you were before you were disabled and I'll cherish that memory. And it's like,
so horrible. It's so horrible.
Like,
it's so bad.
I have to assume that Axe has just been indoctrinated into, like, an extremely nationalistic, like, fascistic, like nation that, well, not, you know, planet, the Andalite homeworld is, because, like, he's like, oh, yeah, I have so much patriotism. Also, we hate everyone. Yeah. And it's like, dude, Dude, I think the Andalite homeworld is, I mean, obviously Yurk's bad, but also you guys are like kind of maybe doing a little bit of a fascism a little bit too.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys are great.
Yeah. I have like I have a little bit of beef.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just a little bit.
The one great thing that comes of them upholding like Andalite bureaucracy is that we get Jake swanning his way up to this man's home and being like, yes, the prince has arrived.
So good. It's one of, like, genuinely that entire scene between Jake as a human and the fucking what the fuck is his name?
Henry Gefinlin.
That when Jake is just like fucking swaggering up to Gefinlin as a human, it's genuinely one of my favorite scenes, not only in this book, but like it's probably like a top tenner for this entire series for me.
It's good. Yeah, it's really
I had a blast.
Yeah, he's like basically Gefinlin's like, hey, why don't you demorph? And Jake's like, don't feel like it, basically.
Yeah.
He definitely bullshits it way longer than I expected him to.
I know. I struggle now every time that Jake holds his shit together really well.
Yeah.
You know, it makes me sad. I like, it's cool and everything, but I just like, I can't take the like crowning moment of badass TM against being like, this is a child.
He's not gonna be so good at improv commander. Later though.
Yeah, he'll be the unsung hero of Marco's podcast. Everyone's like, I didn't like him at first, but he's like really like fucking quietly funny. What the hell?
I'm so obsessed with podcast AU.
I know.
It becomes revealed that Merlin is big kidnapped by the Yurks.
I love that this plan is so fucking involved and gets spat out in, like, a paragraph.
Yeah, I don't even remember all the details of it, because like, it's just, like, they talk about it and then they do it.
It's basically, I'm just mostly obsessed with, like, the plan with, like, the kidnapping where they were both trying to predict each other's behavior. So basically, Gefinlin gets a gun and points it at Jake and is like, you will demorph. And Jake's like, And then everybody, the description that I love so much is that Rachel kicks in a wall and then Cassie, Axe, and Tobias follow daintily through the rubble, which is such a good description of their dynamic. And then Gefinlin is like, okay, well, here's what happened. Visser 3 kidnapped Myrtle and then didn't want to turn him into a controller because of his disability. And then Myrtle knew that Gefinlin would learn that and that Visser 3 would leverage him to Gefinlin. And Gefinlin would sacrifice himself so to get ahead of that so that Gefinlin wouldn't sacrifice himself. He told Visser 3 about the condition that he had, this fatal chronic pain disease that he has. So now he can't be leveraged, but now Visser 3 says he'll release Myrtle if Gaff brings him another Andalite. And it's just like, yep, okay. We're all predicting each other's behavior and making threats and just high drama in the background. And then Axe is like, you know, this, you'd be a traitor if you go blah blah blah. And Gaff is like, I would be a traitor for love. I don't give a shit. And then we learn that he can hear Myrtle's thoughts at all times, and it's a lot.
I love magic, basically.
I love magic.
It's so stupid, but also perfect, you know? Yeah.
He's like, they're like, how are we gonna find him? And then Gav is like, I can hear him if we're on the same planet, I can hear him. And they're like, yep.
Checks out, passes my smell test.
And then we basically get an action sequence until the end.
Yeah, just a lot of, like, collapsing onto U-Haul trucks.
Yeah.
It's not a lot interesting happens. It's, like, three chapters of that, basically.
My favorite part is at one point Marco accidentally, like, bursts into a train car that's full of Hork-Bajir, And then he reaches slowly behind him and finds a ladder rung. And he's like, ooh, I could use this as leverage to rip the wall open. Then he's like, wait, a ladder rung is part of a ladder.
Such a good moment.
And ladders lead to places where you aren't. I could use this ladder. It's like, it's like, Marco, just go up the fucking ladder, dude.
He's so stupid.
They, like, they hit a car with a train somehow in this train yard. I don't really know. And they, like, rescue Martel. And then Gifinolin's like, so you'll leave us alone forever now, right? Because I'd like to end my days honorably in the companion of my dearest friend.
Yeah, like, literally scream. I know I'm one to scream on this podcast, but to save you guys, like, literally scream.
Yeah.
This book ends on the sweetest moment.
Yes.
Yes, I literally teared up.
Beautiful coda. I love Marco so much. I also teared up. He basically, like, he shows up and he's like, hey, I know I shouldn't be here. In thought speak to Myrtle, who's, like, you know, plottering around the greenhouse. He's like, hey, sorry for coming, but I just wanted to say that I know that you're basically... you're taking care of your partner who is, like, gonna die at some point, and if after or before, I don't know, you want some company, I'm around.
Mm-hmm.
And then Myrtle, like, who is described as, like, anxious in all other communications, has, like, a note of, like, pride and love in his voice where he's like, yeah, I could be into that.
It's so sweet. Oh. It is, like, so sweet. I was like... This was, like, as, like, my roommate was coming home, I was reading this, and I was like, ah!
And it's, for me, such a good button with, like, how much we talk about Marco, like, not understanding his own desires and sexuality. There's a point in this book where he's like, oh, Jake is pretending to be interested in something harmless and normal, like sports, where, and I know that he's saying that Jake is pretending to be interested in sports instead of war, but it sounded more like he's, you know, normal and safe, like masculinity. It's fine.
It did take until the third act of this book for Marco to call Cassie Jake's girlfriend.
Yeah.
Which is nothing, but also shipping disease, basically.
Yeah. It's such a nice, like, you know, I know the thing about, like, when you're a kid and you see older gays, like, wandering around, you're like, I would like to be involved in being around you sometimes. I don't know why. Bye.
Yeah.
It's like...
Marco. Our dear sweet boy.
Oh, Marco.
He's just the tenderest young man.
Yeah.
I mean, not, but also, yes.
Yeah.
And so this book ends on the sweetest moment, but it is prefaced briefly.
Oh, right.
But literally the most very special episode closing paragraph ever. It's just like, and to wrap it up, we're all a little bit kooky.
Yeah, it's the fucking Breakfast Club.
It is. It's a very Breakfast Club. He's like, you know, Cassie, the tree hugger, and Rachel, the what, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, who sanctioned this? And it thankfully doesn't undercut, really, because it would still, like, really affected me, the closing moment of this book. But it was just, when I was reading this, I'm like, what, like, commercial from, like, the 90s am I watching? Yeah. from a Disney Channel show. I don't know.
It's a huge marker of how strong the writing in the last page or so is, that it manages to recover so fully and completely from what immediately happened before it.
You know what, this is a fun one. It has a lot of fun ideas going on, but also a lot of challenging ideas.
Challenging ideas, yeah.
Oh god. Well, the Animorphs.
Animorphs, you know?
Oh, geez. Well, thank you all for listening to this, our coverage of the 40th book in the Animorphs series. If you would like to find and support the show, you can find us at The Wonder Yerks on Twitter, or you can go to patreon.com/fearbaiting to support this and our sister podcast, Fearbaiting.
Just a note about our Patreon real quick, by the way. I paused the Patreon for the month just because Fearbaiting is taking the month off. We didn't want to charge people.
Right.
Fair warning, if you do happen to go and pledge right now when we are off, you will still get charged now and at the start of next month. Just so you're aware.
Mm-hmm. But we still appreciate all the support. Do you still want me to read off the patrons, even if it's
paused? Oh, absolutely. They still support the podcast, even if the Patreon's paused.
That's super true.
So thank you very much to Michael Kaiser, Paul Moran, Kit Spindler, Paul Bechtel, and Ducky Aiyuto. We love you all so much.
Yes. If you would like to find your beautiful hosts online, you can find me specifically, Blair Kitch. You can find me, Blair Kitch, on Twitter, where I scream about shipping, much like on this podcast. and y'all?
You can find me on Twitter at SunhatZhenya, SunhatZhenya. You can also find me on some of the other marvelous podcasts on our wonderful network, Noisespace.xyz, hosted by the,
Hosted by Matt.
I couldn't think of a word, it was a word that started with M, but I couldn't remember the word, and all my brain is suggesting use immemorial, which is not the word I would describe Matt.
No.
The immortal Matt GameCube.
Yes.
Matt GameCube will never die. You can also find me on Fearbaiting, like I previously mentioned, when that comes back in September. By the way, get ready. Schlocktober on the horizon. And Henry Kissinger's Pokemon Going to Die, the Leftism podcast. And listen to the other podcasts on Noisespace, too, because they're all really good.
Seda.
Nudity on Twitter with an EA instead of a Y. GayGothVibes.online. Music from Mo Hills.
Yes. That's all of them. So thank you all for listening this week. We will catch you in a couple weeks with our next episode. But until then... I have been Blair.
I'm Sarah.
Sada.
Did someone forget their name?
No.
No? I have my doubts. And remember...
Keep your hand on the escape device.